this fall that looks at the different aspects of God's peace, God's shalom, and what that means for us and what it means for God to want to pour these things in to us as people, but also in what it means with his relationship with his creation in general. And so we have, we've often talked in these aspects of shalom as being at peace between God and human, between human and human, between human and creation, and then at peace with one's self. And so tonight we're going to be looking a little bit at creation. What is God? What does it mean for things to be at peace with creation? And to get us started thinking about this, I just want to give a little bit of background. When we were thinking about this series, Chris and I talked, and it made sense for he was teaching all last week, and so it was going to be tough for him to get a teaching together. So we agreed that I would take this week, and then Adam Brasso was going to help me with this as well. And Adam is a professor at the university. His PhD is in physics, but his application is atmospheric science. And so he and I got together. We did some talking, and the plan was for him to lead a Bible study on Thursday. However, he is up north launching a balloon in connection with Canadian Space Agencies and some other groups. And so the launch keeps getting delayed, and so he is unable to make it back on Thursday. So we're going to postpone a further conversation, but we'll definitely have the opportunity to visit with Adam. He's going to lead a Bible study where you can bring your questions and have the opportunity to sit with an expert in part of this field. But as we were talking, we also recognized that that there is an important summit that's happening this coming weekend in New York, the UN Summit for Climate. And so in thinking about that, in thinking about some of the ways that we could participate as people or as a community, we thought we'd speak about this evening and then kind of put some of these things in front of you and let you wrestle with them during the week. So I just want to first say that one of the sites that is quite helpful is a site called Citizens for Public Justice. And it's small. Oh, and there, you can see. So that's their website. They have lots of information, lots of ways to interact with some of these things. I like that they talk about public justice as a political dimension of loving one's neighbor, caring for creation, and achieving the common good. And so so they have online for this week a whole host of material. There's a Bible study there. There's some suggestions for things that you could do. There's some different hymns that one could sing. There's some different prayers that you could participate in. And so that's one option. The other thing is that there's lots of information on the actual UN Climate Summit site. If you can't remember that, you can just Google UN Climate Summit, and it will come up. And so, basically, this summit is recognizing that there is a problem, and trying to get leaders together to have an intentional conversation and to make some actual resolutions that would stick. And so, for us as Canadians, it's good to think about these things. For us as part of the bigger piece of the world, it's good to think about these things. And so some of the things that they are thinking about, and you can find these on the site, so if we could just spin through them real quick. They're talking about how cities are responsible for lots of the global greenhouse gas, so they're trying to figure out how does one run a city in a way that makes more sense in terms of how we can reduce emissions. There's energy. How do we, right now, 80% of the world's energy is supplied by fossil fuels, and so are there other ways that we can begin to harness energy, find some different ways. There's talk about agriculture. One of the things that's important to note in this is not just that food production has a way of creating greenhouse gas, but that the population is continuing to rise, and so that food production will need to increase by 60%. And so how is that possible, especially with the way that some countries consume and the rates that we consume at? Then also, they are talking about forests and how deforestation has caused problems, and how if we were to get behind replanting and putting trees back in, that it would produce economic benefits and also, oh, can you just go back for a second? Economic growth, and it will help reduce poverty as well. And then the last thing that they're talking about is resilience, which is really about these ideas that that with climate change, there's increasing incidence of natural disasters, and just and how that is affecting certain populations, particularly areas that are close to tropical or the equator, where as temperatures rise, then their land for farming begins to turn into desert, and so they are having trouble planting crops. So these are just some of the things, and you can go to these sites and interact with them at your own leisure. But they're good things to think about and good things to muse over. Now, I suspect that we may not all agree on the cause or whether or not there actually is this thing called global warming. I think that's something you should debate with Adam. Adam will tell you that 97% of scientists believe that there is problems with the climate, and that the 3% that seem to get their message out just have really good lobby groups or lots of money behind them. And so it is a serious thing to consider. But even if you think that there isn't global warming, or however you want to frame it, there is, I think, a biblical mandate for us as people to care for creation. And so I want to just start by quickly thinking about Genesis. And in Genesis, we find God creating. And after everything that he creates, he keeps saying it's good. If we can go to the next slide. And the slide after that as well, Chris. Thanks. Now, where some of the controversy or some of the debate comes out of the way that we have worked at understanding words. So in Genesis 1:26, God creates, and then he says that he gives people dominion over this creation. And then a couple of verses later, that they are to subdue it and have dominion over. And so often people have taken that to mean that we just kind of can plunder and rule and take whatever we want. But if you begin to understand what the words are meaning, the intent behind them, it's more about having a control over so that it doesn't kind of get away on one. So that's this idea of subduing, having control and ruling over. And how you think about ruling is, it would be also always back to relationship of how God rules. And he rules with justice, and he rules with the poor in mind, and these kinds of things. Now, what's interesting, if you read the next chapter of the creation account in Genesis 2, what God says to Adam is that he is to, in respect to the land, to work it and to take care of it. And as you begin to understand these words, it's really about serving and protecting, to serve the earth and to protect it, to care over it. And I think sometimes for me, as I was wrestling with this, one thing that may be helpful is to think in terms of maybe a house sitting analogy, so that somebody's going away, they say, hey, would you come and look after a house? And you say, sure, I can do that. And they'll say, well, we want you to take care of it. You have dominion over the house. Here's the alarm code. Here's the keys. Feel free to, you know, help yourself to what's in the fridge. And so you, if they're gone for a period of time, you would shovel their walks if it's snowing, or you would mow their grass, and you kind of take care of the day-to-day things. You are taking care of the house. But you wouldn't, like, think, oh, these bricks are really sweet by the fireplace, and then bust them out and take them home. And you wouldn't take off the siding thinking, oh, this is really nice siding, this would look good on our house. Actually, that would be more plundering. So there's that slight nuance. Or maybe you would do that, in which case, this is a good conversation for you to be in. So I think, as all of us would understand, or at least from the perspective of how we would approach a worldview of being a Christian, that all of life is dependent on God. But one of the ways that God sustains life is through the way Earth is created. Our planetary home sustains life, but it is also a community. And so we live in this community with abundance of creatures. And what's interesting to me is if you, and this is maybe going back to this house analogy, if you look at eco, the Greek word, the root of that Greek word, it means house. So ecology is the study of a house. Economy is a management of the house. Ecumenical is a universal house. And so there's this idea of house. So in ecology, the environment is all about how the environment as it relates to living organisms. And so it's the branch of biology concerned with the relationship between organisms and their environment. That's ecology. Economy is a system of production and distribution and consumption. And so it's all about figuring out the efficient use of resources, an act of economizing or reducing in cost. These are all part of that conversation. And ecumenical pertains to the idea that there's something bigger than ourselves, a world scope composed of people and creatures from many parts of the world. And so as I mentioned, the planet is not solely our home. We are in community with an abundance of creatures and organisms. And it's more than we just share. It's actually that we are interdependent. We depend on each other. And so I know that even this morning, we were talking about this idea of community being like a body. And so we talk about this Corinthians chapter, and it's a very lovely picture about how we all need each other. There's an ear, and there's an eye, and there's a leg. But one of the websites talks about or offers the idea, what if we were to think a little bit differently in that whole analogy of a body? What if we saw that we are part of an ecosystem of Christ, and so that some of us might be a rainforest, or some of us might be a water cycle, some of us might be photosynthesis. And I know that sounds a little bit weird, but when you begin to think in those ways, you recognize that there's an interdependence, and that's the whole point of a body. There's an interdependence where people are working together, where we as a community of the globe of creation is working together. And so I would say also that in using the word creation, there's a different nuance than if we were to use the word nature. I think if you speak of the word creation, it lends itself and moves us to thinking about a relationship. So creation, because creation points to a creator, and this creator created, and there's a relationship that's implied. A relationship between a human and non-human created order. And so when you think about relationship, then there's an implication that there's an exchange, that care is needed, that there's an interdependence. On the other hand, if you use the word nature, it seems a little bit like the nuance moves us to a place where there is no implication of relationship. That it lends itself more to the idea that if we see Earth as nature, it becomes just a resource. And then when we take that word resource and we couple it with dominion, it can easily be seen how there's this idea of the earth being something to plunder, to exploit for personal gain, that the earth is just a commodity for us. But I think the intent, all the way through, as we read the story of creation and as we read and understand the heart of God, it's that we would care as people for creation and not pillage it. And so as we think about this whole idea of being in relationship, of being in an ecosystem, there's an association of organisms and their physical environment, and it's interconnected by the circulation of energy and nutrients. And so as you think about ecosystems, then there's producers, consumers, and decomposers, and we need all of those things. Having needs is part of being human. But everything that we take, everything that we do as humans leaves some kind of mark or sign. And so often people will talk about a footprint, that we as people, the things that we participate in, the things that we consume, the things that we throw away, all of this leaves a footprint. And so the very basic principle of ecology and ecosystems is that every resource needed comes from somewhere. And everything that is thrown away goes somewhere. It seems like common sense. Every resource that we grab comes from someplace. Everything we throw away has to go somewhere. And so the ecological footprint then tells the story of what impact we are having on the planet, both personally and as groups. And so the resources we use, whether that's directly or indirectly, and the waste product that we dispose, tell and show what this footprint is. Now we, as Westerners, live in a consumer-driven society. And I think on a daily basis, we're encouraged to see ourselves as consumers, or at least that there's always things being held up in front of us to buy. And so often it becomes this tension between an identity that begins to form as a consumer rather than an identity that is really fostered around being a child of God, of being a child of the Creator, of being in relationship with the Creator. And so if you think about Canada and the U.S., and slightly more so for the U.S., but North Americans make up 6% of the world population. I mean, clearly the states have more people. I just mean, but these statistics of Westerners is pretty much the same. That North Americans make up 6% of the world population, but consume 30% of the world's resources. So in Canada and the U.S., we consume 30% of the world's resources while making up 6% of the population. And so the world population is just under 7 billion. And so if you were to take that number and then think of in terms of the world in terms of pure landmass, there would be about 5 acres per person. And of course, some of that isn't livable, but that kind of is what breaks out. So 7 billion people with 5 acres a person. And so the average North American footprint is between 24 and 31 acres. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what it looks like for the way that we consume and the way that we throw away. That each one of us requires that amount of space, even though if you divide it out, there's only 5 acres per person. And so the way that we consume, if we continue to do that, we would need 5 full earths to supply the entire human family. So if everybody were to consume like we do in North America, we'd need 5 planets. But that's just people. That doesn't take into consideration in this idea that not only are we as people part of the world, but there's also other creatures. And so we need even less because there's other species that need space. They need environment. They need food and so on. And so one of the problems that is trying to be addressed at the summit, and I think it's good for us to think about, is that consumption levels are surpassing the carrying capacity. And so that what that means is that we are consuming more than can be sustained. And not only that, we're dumping and leaving more waste that can be absorbed by the earth. And so as a result, our life-sustaining systems are being stressed. There's a loss of forests, as I mentioned. There's declines in aquatic life. There's soil erosion, decline in soil fertility and health, loss of fresh water, significant loss of biodiversity, global climate change and instability, and continued human population growth, which is coupled with increased consumption. So all of these things now are stressing the planet. And on top of that, then, there's all of the greenhouse gas. And so the two biggest contributors to greenhouse gas are the burning of fossil fuels, so how we, cars and so forth, and also the methane from factory farming. And so this is where some people dispute climate change, that you'll hear people say it's just the sun that's warming things. I would say, again, talk to Adam, but he will tell you that that's not true. I can tell you that he'll tell you it's not true. But also, they also would suggest that it's just a trend that as in the past, we've had an ice age, we've had a slow build and a slow decline in warmth. But these things don't seem to make sense, because if you were to track the temperature of the planet, in the last 100 years, it's gone up significantly. It hasn't been a slow rise. It's almost a straight kind of climb. And so it begins to, at least for me, make me ask the question, well, what do we do about this? How can we make a change? Can we make a change? Is it too late? And I know that for myself, as I have been thinking about these things, I've realized that in lots of ways I feel helpless, and that I wonder if the small things I do will actually make a difference. But one thing that Adam said over and over, I think is interesting to note, is that the small things really do make a difference. The small things make a difference. And as we were talking, what I realized is that often the things that I could do that would reduce my personal footprint, or the things that I would do that would be more a more sustainable or more efficient way of living, always conflicts with convenience. So that it would be possible for me to walk to work every day, but not super convenient, especially when it's cold out, for instance. And so there's this tension always of what's convenient and what is necessary. We live in a cold climate, so clearly we need to heat our homes. But are there other ways that we can begin to reduce? I know one thing, and there's a small list that I ran across, but one thing that our kids are always on me about is turning off the water when I'm brushing my teeth. And I'll be wandering around the house, and they're like, "Dad, the water's running." I'm like, "Right, turn off the water." But small things like that actually do add up. And so it becomes, I think, more about an issue of how we understand creation, of what's really in our hearts. And are we spending our energy, our time, our lives at paying attention to creation, working to restore right relationship, one action at a time, day after day? It's funny when I think of when Lori and I were first dating, the things that I would do that would be totally inconvenient, like driving all night to see her or some of these things. It seems like when love is kind of so at the front of things, it's just like you'll do anything, you know? And I wonder how that kind of changes and how can we foster that, especially when we think about creation. If we really love some of these things, if we really were concerned, would we change the way we lived? And so I don't think there is a formula. I think that in talking about this, it's going to have to be an individual kind of working it out. But there are, I think, three questions that can help us guide our thinking. And the questions that I have been thinking for myself as I've worked on this is it excessive? Is it sustainable? And is it economical in the biggest picture? And I think, of course, each one of those words you could argue are subjective words. But I think we know at some level when you've reached a point of excess. And we know when we've reached some point where things just aren't sustainable anymore. And we know at some level that the way we live maybe doesn't work if everybody in the world was living that way. And I think that's the question that I've been trying to work with. So as I ask myself these things, is it necessary? There's that tension between what I actually need and what I need. And so I'm thinking and trying to figure out ways of living a little more simple. And there's things like buying local, working at conserving energy, all these small little things, recycling, evaluating what we're eating. But in the end, the way that we live as North Americans, the amount that we are consuming and the amount that we are throwing away needs to be less. That just seems to be the bottom line. And so there's a few things that came up, some ideas that can get your own minds working. Purchase fruits and vegetables seasonally, grow some of your own food, eat less meat, turn off the water while brushing your teeth, hang your clothes to dry, purchase secondhand clothing. When possible, walk, cycle, carpool. I laughed at public transit here in Saskatoon, but it's probably good when they run the buses. Urge your community and government to take action to reduce carbon emissions. Write a letter to your MP. Encourage your church community to have discussions on creation advocacy. Financially support groups working to promote ecological justice. These are just some ideas that maybe would spark, and as you think this week, and I would encourage you to spin through these websites and to kind of pray and think if God has entrusted me to look after creation, what are some things that I could do that actually would look like I'm caring for creation? What are some things that I could actually do that look like I'm actually fulfilling that mandate of serving and protecting this planet? So as we finish this evening, we always end by by having communion together, coming to the table together. It's the weekly reminder of who Jesus is, of how the only way that change and life comes into being is through understanding Jesus and understanding his relationship to the Father, the Creator. And so as we move into our time of response, I invite you to take some time to pray and to ask God, what are some things that I can do in terms of creation care? As you come to the table, it's the reminder that Jesus loves us, that Jesus is for us, that he's for his creation. And so the way we do it here is when you are ready, you can come forward, just tear off a piece of bread and dip it in the juice. There's hand sanitizer around. The bread is gluten-free and lactose-free, and it's made with olive oil, so we kind of tried to come up with a loaf of bread that all people can participate in. And maybe you're in a place where you just want to go for a walk and you want to think, and that's fine. The response time is really our opportunity to speak back to God. And so there'll be some music that is designed to help you formulate prayers to God to continue to think about creation care. And so let me pray, and then we'll move into our time of response.